So with Hillary Clinton's wins in the Texas, Ohio, and Rhode Island primaries Tuesday, it's looking like the race for the Democratic presidential nomination will go on for quite a while longer. Senator Clinton definitely thinks so. This is what she said Tuesday night after those victories.
To Senator Obama, who has brought so much to this race, I look forward to continuing our dialogue in the weeks ahead on the issues that matter most to our country.
The close delegate count may mean that the Democratic nomination will be in the hands of the superdelegates and may not be decided until the Democratic convention in August. Now, if that happens, that could mean the first actual meaningful party convention in decades. You see, conventions weren't always just glitz and glamour, pomp and circumstance. They actually used to be the way that parties chose their candidates, their nominees. And back in the day, conventions could get pretty darn messy and long and drawn out. And frankly, for those people who love politics or just good drama, it's hard not to romanticize the whole thing. We found a great piece that kind of does that about the messiest one of them all in the Washington Post the other day, entitled The Ballot Brawl of 1924. And when we at the BPP find a story we like, we do a little thing we call Ripped Off from the Headlines. Joining us now is Peter Carlson, Washington Post staff writer and the man who wrote that piece. Hey, Peter.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, thanks for being here. I'm going to ask you to start off our conversation by reading the lead of your piece.
It's so great.
It's so great. And read it, if you will, Peter, in the voice that you imagined in your head when you wrote it.
Okay. Here goes. Those TV yappers are all in a tizzy about the upcoming Democratic convention. They keep jibber-jabbering about how neither Clinton nor Obama will have enough delegates to win the presidential nomination, and they'll need to woo the high-powered superdelegates. They keep yakking about a deadlocked convention, or better yet, a brokered convention. These young whippersnappers don't know doodly about a deadlocked convention. Most of them weren't even born the last time a convention fight went beyond the first ballot, which was 1952. Back in my day, Democrats had real conventions with real nomination fights that went on for dozens of ballots. It took 46 ballots to nominate Woodrow Wilson in 1912. And 44 ballots to nominate James Cox in 1920. Geez, it took 4 ballots to nominate Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1932. Well, and he was FDR, for crying out loud.
Thank you for that rendition of your own piece. This is a lovely setup to what we could be seeing. I mean, the odds, we'll get to whether or not this is actually something that could be in the offing. But let's step back and talk about how those conventions worked for the first half of the last century that made it possible for them to get so complicated and messy. Walk us through that process.
Well, in those days, they had primaries, but they didn't really decide much, and they didn't have them in all that many states. Most of the states came to the convention having decided in a convention back home how they would all vote. And they usually had a unit rule, so they all voted together. And frequently, they all voted for their favorite son candidate, the governor or senator from their state, for a few ballots. Not just the first ballot. Sometimes they like to go for a few.
And not necessarily because they thought they were the best candidate. They just thought, it's our hometown boy.
Yeah, it was the guy that gave him a job, usually.
Okay.
So then they would come to the convention and then they'd have many, many ballots until they figured out who was going to win this thing.
Which means, I mean, literally days and days and days of voting, right?
Yeah, in 1924, the convention I wrote about, it was predicted to end after, you know, a week or 10 days, but they hadn't nominated anyone yet, so it went on for 16 days. People had
wow.
to be wiring home for money to pay their hotel bills.
That is amazing. Let's talk a little bit, without getting too far into it, but set up the scene in 1924. Who were the candidates, and what were the different political factions that were having such a hard time coming to an agreement, a consensus?
Well, there were 15 candidates. Most of them were favorite sons with delusions of grandeur. But the two main candidates were Al Smith, the governor of New York, and William Gibbs McAdoo, who was from California and had he had been Woodrow Wilson's Treasury Secretary and was Woodrow Wilson's son-in-law. And the two factions, it was kind of a red state, blue state thing. The Smith people tended to be northern, urban, Catholic in a lot of cases, and wet, meaning that they were against prohibition, which was at that time the law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And the McAdoo people tended to be rural, western or northern, and dry. And one of the big fights at the convention was about prohibition, of course. The other was, which got really nasty, was about the Ku Klux Klan. The Klan was at the height of its power at that time, and of the 1,098 delegates, people estimated that somewhere up to 400 of them were actually members of the Ku Klux Klan.
Wow.
Most of them were McAdoo people. Georgia and Indiana were pretty much controlled by the Klan, the Georgia and Indiana delegations. So anyway, they fought for days over a proposal, a party platform proposal to denounce the Klan, and the official platform denounced the Klan without ever mentioning it. But the Smith people wanted a platform plank that denounced the Klan and actually used the phrase the Ku Klux Klan.
So there were some real polarizing issues that were the backdrop to making their choice. I understand you have a passage for us written by famous journalist and writer H.L. Mencken, a lead that he wrote when he was actually covering this very convention. Would you mind reading that to us?
Sure. He was there, and the convention started on June 24th. So he's writing this on July 7th, 2 days before it ended. And, of course, he was a great writer, but here we go. It begins like this. Madison Square Garden, New York, July 7th. Hit a man with an axe and he will jump. Hit him 40 times and he will only groan. This convention has got to the latter stage. Even the Ku Kluxers are past all hope of caring. They believe that they will put McAdoo over before the day is out, and the chances seem to be very fair that they will. But if they succeed at it, they will be without enthusiasm. They are in the sad position of the swain who courted a sweet one for 42 consecutive years, and then found, when she yielded at last, that she had a glass eye, wore a wig, and macerated her daily rations between two batteries of china teeth.
Peter, we're talking with Peter Carlson, Washington Post staff writer, the man who wrote a piece on that historic 1924 convention. Peter, I'm going to ask you to stick around. I've got a couple more questions for you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Stay with us through the break. We're talking with Peter Carlson of the Washington Post, and we're going to continue our conversation about the Democratic conventions. You're listening to the Bryant Park Project on NPR News. Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are on digital, FM, satellite, available through iTunes and online at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Allison Stewart along with Rachel Martin. Coming up, fixing typos on public signs. It's one group's mission. We'll also put a quarter in the BPP jukebox. But Rachel?
First, we're going to finish our conversation with Peter Carlson, Washington Post staff writer, a man who wrote a piece recently about a historic Democratic Party convention in 1924. It got down and dirty. Peter, in your piece and the piece we heard you read from by H.L. Mencken before the break, there is this romantic quality, or at least a bit of nostalgia, as messy and inefficient and maybe not so fair as conventions used to be. Is there part of you that wish that you'd been around to cover them as they were in all their glory?
Well, yeah. I mean, they were much better shows than the ones now. Nowadays, it's just an advertisement for the guy who's already won the thing before he gets there. Although this year, the Democrats may be in the old position. But in those days, you didn't necessarily know who was going to win, and people were fighting it out on the convention floor, and it was an actual event.
I mean, and literally fighting it out, right? In 1924, wasn't there an actual fist fight?
Oh, there were many fist fights. The one I wrote about was when the anti-Klan people demonstrated, and they marched around the halls, as they used to do then, and they tried to grab the state banners and carry them around, and people who were pro-Klan stopped them, including the governors of Kentucky and Colorado, who got into fist fights with people who wanted to carry their banners around.
Now, I will ask you to do a little bit of speculation. Any chance you think it could get, I mean, do you see fists flying this year in Denver for the Democrats?
Probably not.
Oh, come on.
Shoot.
Fist fight seems to be an archaic thing amongst the kind of people who go to conventions.
What about smoke-filled rooms? Everyone wants to talk about smoke-filled rooms.
Yeah, and they probably have to go outside.
I say they're going to be in convention centers. They can't smoke.
Bring back the good old days.
Well, Peter Carlson, thank you so much. Washington Post staff writer, for walking us through the 1924 historic Democratic Convention. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Take care.